We are starting chapter 3 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Will and Won't. Harry was snoring loudly. He had been sitting in a chair beside his bedroom window for the best part of 4 hours, staring out at the darkening street, and had finally fallen asleep with one side of his face pressed against the cold window pane, his glasses askew, his mouth wide open. The misty fog. It says fog, but I assume they mean fog. The misty fog his breath had left on the window sparkled in the orange glare of the street lamp outside, and the artificial light drained his face of all color, so that he looked ghostly beneath his shock of untidy black hair. The room was strewn with various possessions and a good smattering of rubbish. Owl feathers, apple cores, and sweet wrappers littered on the floor. A number of spell books lay higgledy-piggledy along tangled robes of his bed, and a mess of newspapers sat in a puddle of light on his desk. The headline of one blared, "Harry Potter, the Chosen One?" Rumors continued to fly about the mysterious recent disturbance at the Ministry of Magic, during which he who must not be named was cited once more. "We're not allowed to talk about it. Don't ask me anything," said one agitated obliviator, who refused to give his name, as he left the ministry last night. Nevertheless, highly placed sources within the ministry have confirmed that the disturbances centered on the fabled Hall of the Prophecy. Though ministry spokeswizards have hitherto refused even to confirm the existence of such a place, a growing number of the wizarding community believe that the Death Eaters, now serving sentences in Azkaban for trespass and attempted theft, were attempting to steal a prophecy. The nature of the prophecy is unknown, though speculation is rife that it concerns Harry Potter, the only person ever known to survive the killing curse. Okay? And who is also known to have been at the ministry on the night in question. Some are going so far as to call Potter the Chosen One, believing that the prophecy names him as the only one who will be able to rid us of who must not be named. The current whereabouts of the prophecy, if it exists, are unknown, although, continues Pigeon 2 calmly. The second newspaper lay beside the first. This one bore the headline, "Scrimgeour succeeds Fudge."
I think it's Scrimjar.
I never know what to say. Scrimjar?
Yeah.
Scrimjar?
Is that how it's spelled?
S-C-R-I-M-G-E-O-U-R. Scrimger?
Scrimjaw.
Scrimjaw?
Yeah.
Like, not even pronouncing the R.
Nope.
Scrimjaw succeeds Fudge. Most of this page was taken up by a large black and white picture of a man with a lion-like mane of thick hair and a rather ravaged face.
It looked a lot like Bill Nye.
Bill Nye?
N-I-G-H-Y.
Who's that?
He's the rock star in Love Actually.
Oh, really? That's his name, Bill Nye? So funny. Oh, but it did look like him. The man was waving at the ceiling.
You get it, because he was him.
I know. Dork. Rufus Scrimjaw, previously head of the Auror Office in the Department of Magical Law Enforcement, has succeeded Cornelius Fudge as Minister of Magic. This appointment has largely been greeted with enthusiasm by the wizarding community, though rumors of a rift between the new minister and Albus Dumbledore, newly reinstated chief warlock of the Wizengamot, surfaced within hours of Scrimjaw taking office. Scrimjaw's representatives admitted that he had met with Dumbledore at once upon taking the job, but refused to comment on the topics under discussion. Albus Dumbledore is known to, continued page 3 column 2. To the left of this paper sat another, which had been folded to the story bearing the title, "Ministry Guarantees Student Safety," was visible. Newly appointed Minister of Magic, Rufus Scrimjaw, spoke today of his tough new measures taken by his ministry to ensure the safety of students returning to the Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry this autumn. "For obvious reasons, the ministry will not be going into detail about its stringent new security plans," said the minister, although an insider confirmed the measures included defensive spells and charms, a complex array of counter-curses, and a small task force of aurors dedicated solely to the protection of Hogwarts School. Most seemed reassured by the new minister's tough stand on student safety. Said Mrs. Augusta Longbottom, "My grandson Neville, a good friend of Harry Potter's, incidentally, who fought the Death Eaters alongside him at the Ministry in June, and..." But the rest of the story was obscured by the large birdcage standing on top of it. Inside, it was a magnificent snowy owl. Her amber eyes surveyed the room imperiously, her head swiveling occasionally to gaze at her snoring master. Once or twice, she clicked her beak impatiently, but Harry was too deeply asleep to hear her. A large trunk stood in the middle of the room. Its lid was open. It looked expectant, yet it was almost empty, but for the residue of old underwear, sweets, empty ink bottles, and broken clothes that coated the very bottom. Nearby on the floor lay a purple leaflet, emblazoned with the words, "Issued on behalf of the Ministry of Magic, protecting your home and family against dark forces. The wizarding community is currently under threat from an organization calling itself the Death Eaters. Observing the following simple security guidelines will help protect your family and your home from attack. You're advised not to leave the house alone. Particular care should be taken during the hours of darkness. Whenever possible, arrange to complete journeys before the night has fallen. Review the security arrangements around your house, making sure that all family members are aware of emergency measures such as shield and disillusionment charms, and in the case of underage family members, sidle along apparition. Agree with security questions with close friends and family so as to detect Death Eaters masquerading as others by use of the polyjuice potion, see page 2. Should you feel that a family member, colleague, or friend is acting in a strange manner, contact the magical law enforcement squad at once. They may have been put under the imperious curse, see page 4. Should the dark mark appear over any dwelling place or other building, do not enter, but contact the Aura office immediately. Unconfirmed sightings suggest that Death Eaters may now be using Inferi, see page 10. Any sighting of an Inferius or encounter with same should be reported to the Ministry immediately. Harry grunted in his sleep, and his face slid down the window an inch or so, making his glasses more lopsided, but he did not wake up. An alarm clock, repaired by Harry several years ago, ticked loudly on the sill, showing 1 minute to 11. Beside it, held in Harry's relaxed hand, was a piece of parchment covered in thin, slanted writing. Harry had read this letter so often since its arrival 3 days ago that although it had been delivered in a tightly furled scroll, it now lay quite flat. "Dear Harry, if it is convenient to you, I shall call at number 4 Privet Drive this coming Friday at 11 p.m. to escort you to the borough where you have been invited to spend the remainder of your school holiday. If you are agreeable, I should also be glad of your assistance in a manner of which I hope to attend on the way to the borough. I shall explain this more fully when I see you. Kindly send your answer by return of this owl. Hoping to see you this Friday, I am yours most sincerely, Albus Dumbledore." Though he already knew it by heart, Harry had been stealing glances at this missive every few minutes since 7 o'clock that evening, when he had first taken up his position beside his bedroom window, which had a reasonable view of both ends of Privet Drive. He knew it was pointless to keep rereading Dumbledore's words. Harry had sent back his yes with the delivery owl as requested, and all he could do now was wait. Either Dumbledore was going to come, or he was not. But Harry had not yet packed. It just seemed too good to be true that he was going to be rescued from the Dursleys after a mere fortnight of their company. He could not shrug off the feeling that something was going to go wrong. His reply to Dumbledore's letter might have gone astray. Dumbledore could be prevented from collecting him. The letter might turn out not to be from Dumbledore at all, but a trick or joke or trap. Harry had not been able to face packing, and then being let down and having to unpack again. The only gesture he made to have the possibility of a journey was to shut his snowy owl, Hedwig, safely in her cage. The minute hand on the alarm clock had reached the number 12. And at that precise moment, the street lamp outside his window went out. Harry awoke as though a sudden darkness were an alarm. Hastily straightening his glasses and unsticking his cheek from the window, he pressed his nose against the window instead and squinted it down at the pavement. A tall figure in a long billowing cloak was walking up the garden path. Harry jumped up as though he had received an electric shock, knocked over his chair, and started snatching anything and everything within reach from the floor and throwing it into the trunk, even as he lobbed a set of robes, two spell books, and a packet of crisps across the room. The doorbell rang. Downstairs in the living room, his Uncle Vernon shouted, "Who in the blazes is calling at this time of night?" Harry froze with a brass telescope in one hand and a pair of trainers in the other. He had completely forgotten to warn the Dursleys that Dumbledore might be coming. Feeling both panicky and close to laughter, he clambered over the trunk and wrenched open his bedroom door in time to hear a deep voice say, "Good evening. You must be Mr. Dursley. I dare say Harry has told you I would be coming for him." Harry ran down the stairs, two at a time, coming to an abrupt halt several steps from the bottom, as long experience had taught him to remain out of arm's reach from his uncle whenever possible. There in the doorway stood a tall, thin man with waist-length silver hair and beard. Half-moon spectacles were perched on his crooked nose, and he was wearing a long black traveling cloak and pointed hat. Vernon Dursley, whose mustache was quite as bushy as Dumbledore's, though black, and was wearing a puce dressing gown, was staring at the visitor as though he could not believe his tiny eyes. "Judging by your stunned look of disbelief, Harry did not warn you that I was coming," said Dumbledore, pleasantly. "However, let us assume that you have invited me warmly into your house. It is unwise to linger over long on doorsteps in these troubled times." He stepped smartly over the threshold and closed the front door behind him. And I think we'll stop there. It's bedtime. I hope you like that beautiful kitten room. Sleep well, darling. I love you.